It's Tuesday, March 16th. How quickly can you move thousands of children? We start here. Very few adults are allowed inside these facilities at the border, but the ones coming out are worried.
There's not enough beds for everybody. They saw children as young as a year old.
Now, fielding criticism from both sides, the Biden administration is desperately seeking new space. It's one of the biggest lifelines available in their fight against COVID, and it's off the table.
Fundamentally, AstraZeneca is on pause.
Why several countries have suddenly stopped offering one of the only vaccines available to them. And how will this year's Oscars be remembered?
Oscars so progressive? ?
The film industry has never seen a year like this, so what's to become of its biggest award show? From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey.
What we came upon by accident was an operation apparently to apprehend what appeared to be migrants, asylum seekers, one of whom is a minor, 17 years old.
The rule about unaccompanied minors is they're supposed to be in Homeland Security custody for less than 72 hours. Remember, these are children who have traveled hundreds, perhaps thousands of miles without a guardian to come to this country. They've been through a lot.
They've loaded up a group of them. They're now probably taking them to a Border Patrol station. There's a wagon coming right now.
And yet our Border Patrol facilities are so unfriendly, frankly, to kids that it's seen as detrimental to their health to put them in these centers for more than 3 days before they get hooked up with Health and Human Services.
We're going to go to the border now where a migrant crisis is growing again.
Sources tell ABC News things are at a record high with more than 4,200 children currently in custody right now.
Well, ABC News was the first to learn just how many children are piling up right now in these facilities. More than 4,000 in custody at a time for well over 3 days. And in the last 24 hours, more politicians, more volunteers, and more reporters have been witnessing this up close and asking the White House, what are you planning to do about it? Our chief White House correspondent, Cecilia Vega, is at the U.S.-Mexico border right now. Cecilia, where are you?
Well, Brad, I'm actually standing outside the facility at Donna, Texas, and this is one of the big ones right now. There are hundreds and hundreds of kids inside this facility in hugely overcrowded conditions, and lawyers who just got inside are painting a pretty disturbing picture in there.
Yeah, I was going to say, are you getting a sense of what's going on? Or I guess the Biden administration is not even letting you in there.
Brad, I just did the math today. By our count, between my asks and asks from people on my White House team, we've asked 24 times, more than two dozen times, for access into facilities like this one, only to be denied every single time.
We continue to support transparency. And from here, from the White House, and DHS oversees some of the facilities. HHS oversees some of the facilities. I know that they're working through how to provide access in a way that is abides by COVID protocols. And also,
look, the White House says they're committed to transparency. They say they're trying to get journalists like me in to see for ourselves what's happening in there. But the reality is it's not happening. We haven't been in. They say it's about COVID. They say it's about protecting the rights, the privacy rights of these kids in there.
Okay, so what are the lawyers telling you when they describe what they're seeing?
What did you say to these kids?
We tell the children who we are, that we don't work for the government, that we don't work for CBP.
Well, it's just downright heartbreaking. I mean, they say we're talking about 45 to 50 kids crammed in a small space.
The children described to us that they were living in a large tent that was partitioned into smaller areas with clear plastic.
There's not enough beds for everybody. They saw children as young as a year old.
Now, some of them are young children that were coming with their older siblings.
These are kids who traveled here without their parents, so unaccompanied minors. They told these lawyers that some of them haven't had showers for 7 days, that they haven't been able to call their parents at home.
They did tell us that every few days they were allowed to go into a courtyard for about 20 minutes. But it seems that some children would go longer than that without seeing the sun.
The sad part about all of this, it didn't have to happen. This crisis is created by the presidential policies of this new administration. There's no other way to claim it than a Biden border crisis.
Well, and so what's the response from politics? Like, on one hand, You got a lot of Republican members of Congress right now showing up, seeing this, horrified, and saying this is a crisis. President Biden needs to do something about it quickly. But really, there's not a ton of solutions being offered besides, like, send the kids back, which, like, it's horrible conditions on the other side of the border. Like, if you're concerned about these kids' safety, like, they're not going to be safer there. And yet then the White House says, well, we're all ears. Like, tell us some solutions. Excuse me. I think the average person thinks, like, are you the White House? Like, you got to come up with something.
Well, their hands are tied fairly. You know, they are trying to use all the resources they've got and at their disposal. They've brought in FEMA to help to try to just shows you what an emergency they see this as. They're bringing in FEMA.
We recognize this is a big problem. The last administration left us a dismantled and unworkable system. And like any other problem, we are going to do everything we can to solve it. So our focus here is on solutions. Let me just walk you through a couple of the steps. And we've done this a little bit.
They're building facilities in Midland, Texas. They just announced that they're going to open a facility at the Dallas Convention Center that's going to house 3,000 teenage boys there. The reality is the numbers are just overwhelming, though. They can't keep up. Kids keep coming.
We want to expedite getting these kids out of these CBP facilities as quickly as possible. And that's our goal and our objective, and into shelters as quickly as possible, then into sponsored homes while their cases are being considered and adjudicated.
And the one thing the Biden administration is doing differently than the Trump administration is they're not sending those kids back alone. So the advocate groups who are, you know, working for immigrants say, we need to remove some of this bureaucratic red tape and get these kids out of these jail-like facilities faster and into the foster system, into more child-friendly systems, or frankly, at home with some of their family members who are here north of the border.
One woman who crossed the Rio Grande on a smuggler's raft said the Biden administration is the reason she and her one-year-old son attempted the journey at all. She said, they gave us the opportunity to come, and come they did.
I mean, the messaging clearly isn't getting through. The Biden administration has said, don't come now. That's not working. There are still thousands of people lined up at the border waiting to get in as we speak. But the reality is, as one source I was talking to today said, this isn't a switch you can flip on and off. No matter what they do, it's not going to change by tomorrow.
All right, Cecilia Vega outside of one of those facilities. We'll see if you get a peek inside at some point. Thanks for the reporting.
Thanks, Brad.
No country in the world has recorded as many COVID-19 deaths as the United States. That will be part of the legacy that your kids and grandkids will hear about someday. But if there's one thing we've been doing comparatively well, it's vaccinations.
Nearly 70 million people in the U.S. have now received at least one vaccine dose. That's 27% of the adult population.
At this point, the U.S. has three vaccines that were given emergency use authorization by the FDA. Pfizer, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson. By every conceivable measure so far, those vaccines are overwhelmingly safe and effective.
Well, the U.K. has approved another vaccine, this one from Oxford and AstraZeneca.
There's actually a fourth that we thought would be on the way by now from AstraZeneca. Its paperwork has not been formally submitted for authorization in the U.S., but several other countries have already approved it. And while supply of the other vaccines ramps up, it's really been some of these countries' only options.
Based on reports of blood clots in some people who received doses of the vaccine.
But in the last few days, several countries have actually temporarily halted its use. So let's bring in ABC's foreign correspondent James Longman in London. James, what are these governments seeing?
Well, there has apparently been some new evidence, they say, come to light, which suggests that there have been blood clots in some of the people who have been administered the AstraZeneca vaccine. And as a result, the latest figure is 10 nations in Europe have decided to pause the AstraZeneca vaccine rollout, among them the biggest nations. So we're talking Germany, France, Italy, Spain, the Netherlands. Mm. It's not all of Europe. There are a lot of smaller ones who want to continue going. But fundamentally, AstraZeneca is on pause. But Britain is scratching its head about this because this country has been rolling out AstraZeneca for months.
Health officials are calling this new vaccine from Oxford AstraZeneca, they're calling it a pivotal moment in the fight against coronavirus.
Millions upon millions of people have already had it. We're actually ahead of even the United States in our vaccination rollout in Britain.
Right.
And there have not been any major side effects reported.
There will always be cases of serious illness around the time of vaccination.
But that's very different from saying the vaccines cause these things.
And if you actually look at the numbers of this blood clots in, specifically, the EU study suggests one in 167,000 people seem to be getting the blood clot. AstraZeneca says it's one in 500,000. Whatever you believe that to be, it is still fewer than the number of people who get blood clots in the general population. And it is definitely fewer than people who die of COVID. So there is a lot of outrage, really, in Britain, especially about this happening.
Wait, so is it safe or are people just not sure that it's safe? Like, what is the line from these governments that are stopping the distribution?
There's a lot of history here, Brad. It goes back a few months because AstraZeneca and the European Union have been going back and forth on late orders, on cancelled orders, on not fulfilling promises. There was a big rush, obviously, to get the first vaccines that were going to be approved. Pfizer, Moderna, and now I know Johnson & Johnson is one of the ones that European countries want. But the AstraZeneca one was the one they ordered most of, and it was always going to be the one destined for Europe. It's also being broadly manufactured in Europe, unlike Pfizer and others who are mostly manufactured in the United States. So AstraZeneca was always going to be the vaccine which was going to help Europe. And so there is bad blood between AstraZeneca and the European Union. But at the same time, AstraZeneca will say there is no proof that our vaccines are not working properly.
So the vaccine doesn't cause blood clots. What we do know causes blood clots, of course, is COVID itself.
And if you look at the real world test case, which is the United Kingdom at the moment, then you'll see there is no evidence. Now, I'm not a doctor, but I can tell you that in Britain, there have not been any reports of major side effects to the AstraZeneca vaccine. I mean, look, the European Union, you know, they ordered lots of different vaccines from a lot of different manufacturers. And they wanted to spread the risk because they weren't sure which vaccines were going to work. Britain and the United States, to some extent, rolled the dice on a smaller number of vaccine manufacturers, and their gamble paid off. And this is all about risk and the comparative capacity that Europe is willing to take on risk, brackets, not very much, and the UK and the US, who are willing to take more risks when it comes to these things. Our risks are paying off, Europe's did not, and now, their critics will say, they're trying to hide their botched vaccination rollout by blaming AstraZeneca. And so this is really a mess. As it stands, if you're in your 20s or 30s now and you're on the continent, you may not be getting any kind of vaccine until well past the summer.
They're actually in Italy. They're talking about the possibility of national lockdown or potentially weekend lockdowns. What happens in Italy, what's happening in Slovakia, in Hungary, in Germany, it's going in the wrong direction.
And there is a really important element to all this. The AstraZeneca vaccine is the $3 vaccine. It's the vaccine which is going to help the developing world. They badly need it. There are parts of the world calling out for this vaccine. And if the European Union continues to pour scorn on the efficacy, the apparent, the alleged inefficacy of this particular vaccine, then that really imperils the vaccination programs for developing countries and the entire planet.
I was about to say, if you approved something, you said it did work, and then you're saying now we're not approving it, then it doesn't even just affect that one vaccine. It affects the whole idea of vaccines because you're like, wait, does an approval really mean an approval at this point?
Well, that's right. It's about vaccine confidence more broadly, and Europe has had a long problem with getting people on board with all kinds of vaccinations. You know, as a layperson, someone who is not a doctor, but has, and I should also add, in my case, had the AstraZeneca vaccine, there doesn't seem to have been any real-world data in Britain to suggest that there are any negative side effects to taking this particular vaccine.
Right, and if the blood clot thing is real, I mean, blood clots, they're no joke. The question will be how many people you're protecting as Europe's COVID crisis is actually growing a lot worse. All right, James Longman in London. Thank you.
Thank you, Brad.
Next up on Start Here, the nominees are out, but what happens when you can watch every one of them from your couch? Our Oscars sneak peek after the break. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Have you ever wondered what you would do with an extra hour in your day? I think about this all the time. I'm like, I would be so productive. I'd exercise more, or I'd read a book, or I'd take a nap, like restore myself. We often find ourselves yearning for these extra hours, but the real question is, what would you do if you were making yourself a priority? Well, how about therapy? It can help you discover what's important so you can make the most of your time. If you've ever benefited from therapy, you know how transformative it can be. It's not just for those who have experienced major trauma. Therapy empowers you to learn positive coping skills, set boundaries, and become the best version of yourself. If you're considering starting therapy, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and tailored to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire. You'll be matched with a licensed therapist. And here's the beauty of it. You can switch therapists if you're not finding the right fit. No additional charge. Take the first step. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/start here today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/start here.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.
It's all happening later than usual, but it's happening.
And finally, the nominees for Best Picture, voted by all members of the Academy, are...
Yesterday in Hollywood, the nominees for this year's Academy Awards were announced. But in a year when you don't go out to the movies, many of the movies are just sitting right there on your TV. Do you watch all of these? Do you watch some of them? Let's bring in Kelly L. Carter, film writer for our friends at ESPN's The Undefeated. You're also going to hear her voice in the upcoming ABC podcast, Inside the Oscars. So, Kelly, can we just talk about this list of movies first? Was this the list you were expecting? And if it was, I mean, which of these movies are good? What should I check out later tonight?
You know what? It's funny that you say that. I guess I picked a favorite so early, I think, in this awards season that it was hard for me to really think about the totality of my expectations of what would get announced as Best Picture.
I am a revolutionary.
And that film for me was Judas and the Black Messiah. I just was obsessed with it and loved it so much.
The Black Panthers are forming a rainbow coalition of oppressed brothers and sisters of every color.
Hello, everyone.
Make yourself to home, Mr. Mankiewicz, or shall I call you Herman?
Please, call me Mank.
Mank is the kind of film that we typically see, I think, every year. You know, this industry loves movies about itself.
That's the real magic of the movies.
Citizen Kane is considered, of course, to be the greatest film of all time. So a film about the man who wrote Citizen Kane obviously is going to be nominated.
Grandma smells like Korea.
And Minari has been getting a lot of steam. You know, is hands down one of the best films to come out of the cycle.
Aigo, pretty boy, pretty boy, pretty boy.
I'm not pretty, I'm good looking.
Nomadland.
You are one of those lucky people that can travel anywhere.
A front runner right now, you know, for Best Director, certainly.
That's the one with Frances McDormand.
Exactly, Frances McDormand. People are loving this film. Voters are loving this film. It's cleaning up award show after award show.
Nomadland!
Every week, I go to a club. I act like I'm too drunk to stand.
And Promising Young Woman feels very resonant, I think, to a lot of the headlines that we've been experiencing these last few years with regards to the Me Too movement.
It's every guy's worst nightmare getting accused like that.
Can you guess what every woman's worst nightmare is?
It feels about right, and it feels about like what we expected to see from Best Picture nominees.
Okay, so that's like the basic rundown. That's the Kelly L. Carter picks. We got it. Great. As far as like the actual award selections themselves, were there trends here that you saw emerge? Like, was there an Oscars so white kind of vibe? Was there an Oscars so dude kind of vibe? What stuck out to you?
I would like to call it Oscars so progressive, question mark. You know, I really think that
question mark.
Question mark, because I think that we saw a lot of successes in the aftermath of having these conversations now, for like the last 5-6 years. about how whitewashed the voting body, you know, felt and certainly the output of nominees were.
We've got the first Asian American nominated for lead actor, the first Muslim nominated for lead actor, the first
And this year it feels like there's been a shift. You know, we've seen some history happen.
Viola Davis is officially the most nominated Black actress of all time.
So Daniel Kaluuya in Judas and the Black Messiah.
In the Best Supporting Male Actor category, you have three Black men up for an award. That's never happened before.
And we have our first Black producing team with Judas and the Black Messiah.
Which also very significant to talk about this year is Chloe Zhao and Emerald Fennell being nominated for in the Best Direction category. It's the first time that two women have been nominated.
Well, the time has come. Catherine Bigelow!
Only one woman has won that category in the history of the Academy Awards, so that's a very special moment to see. That said, I think one major snub that people, you know, are talking about, Delroy Lindo. You know, no love for the Five Bloods.
I see ghosts, y'all. I see ghosts.
What happens to all of us, man?
Have you seen them too?
Yeah.
This Spike Lee film that came out on Netflix earlier in the summer, it was the first time that you saw the Black male soldier Vietnam experience.
Who was that guy?
That brother was the best damn soldier that ever lived.
And I don't know what happened. I don't know if that was one of those things that because it came out in the summer, people kind of forgot about it and it got a little bit lost. But I think people definitely have been talking this week about Delroy Lindo's name not being called for that particular category.
The Academy Awards announcing that because of the pandemic, streamed films that never make it into theaters will be eligible for Oscars. This year only, Michael.
That's kind of interesting, though, that you mentioned, like, this movie was on Netflix, and maybe it was too early, and, like, all that it got lost in the avalanche of Netflix films. This year seems just so different in terms of how you accessed movies in the first place. Did that play into what we're seeing now?
Yeah, you know, I definitely believe so. This is probably the first year in the history of the Oscars that real, actual movie watchers get a chance or had a chance to see films before they heard about them. Everybody's stuck at home, bored, wanting to watch things. So people are consuming films. Everyone is signed up for every streaming service known to man.
Right.
So you can watch films on Hulu, Amazon, Disney Plus, Netflix.
Like Hulu puts it in front of your face and you're like, sure, I got nothing better.
Literally, you finish watching like, you know, I don't know, like a Punky Brewster marathon. And then it's like, hey, up next, do you want to watch this one film? And it's, sure, why not? You're suggesting it. I will watch it because perhaps that's something else that will keep me from driving myself crazy while I'm stuck inside of my home. And so I think you had a lot of viewers who feel like they're in for the first time. They're in on this.
Now, you often hear that Hollywood is out of touch with the rest of the country.
There's this really great bit that happened years ago, and you probably remember this when Chris Rock hosted the Academy Awards. He went out and to like a Magic Johnson theater and talked to real cinema goers.
What was your favorite movie this year?
Alien vs. Predator.
Run down the list of all the Best Picture nominees and ask if they had seen any of those movies.
Did you see Sideways?
No.
No, I didn't.
No, I didn't.
Did you see Finding Neverland? No.
Did you
see more than half of those people hadn't even heard of those movies before. No one had seen that movie. But the one movie consistently that everyone had seen that year was White Chicks.
Oh, yeah, I love White Chicks. Yeah.
Did you see White Chicks?
Yes, I love that movie.
And it was hilarious because it really showed this disconnect between, you know, what people were watching versus, you know, kind of the maybe snootiness, I think, of the awards voters. And certainly the suggestion wasn't that a film like White Chicks should be an Oscar consideration, but it really was a chance to talk about how we're not paying attention to what real people are actually entertained by. Art house films, indie films are amongst the most entertaining films, but usually it just feels very much inside of a bubble. You know, they're not accessible.
Right. And like, if you're saying like everyone finally knows these films, I guess that would also suggest like the mainstream crowd will watch art house films. The art house crowd watches mainstream films if they're all being served on the same menu. But I guess I wonder then, Kelly, does that go away then once people get to go back into theaters and like there's going to be blockbusters next year, right?
Sure.
Do people just, they leave their Hulu behind, they go back into the world and they watch The Avengers. Great. Like this year was a one-off.
I don't know. I think I'm in the camp that everything has changed now moving forward. I mean, you know, I live in LA, and one of the things that's happening this week is that movie theaters are about to open back up this week. I don't know if people are going to be rushing to movie theaters, but what I do know is that during this last now year plus, you know, of being at home, people have been taking advantage if they're able to, of these Home Depot and Best Buy sales to make, you know, screening rooms in their homes, you know, get the sound bars for sound quality, projections for backyard. People are, especially families, you know, they're under family movie night at home is now a thing again.
So the wall being broken down between those art houses and the popcorn stuff.
Yeah.
Any predictions before we go? Any predictions on what's going to win here?
I would love to see Judas win Best Film, but I think there are a couple of foregone conclusions that we can say. I think Chadwick Boseman wins Best Actor, and I think that's going to be a very emotional and very very important moment to kind of witness, and that puts him in a very unique category. There have only been, you know, he's now in a James Dean category, Heath Ledger category, and that's going to be important. I think Daniel Kaluuya kind of competently walks away with that win. And I think Olivia Colman, anything she's nominated for, she wins. So if you're making a bet in Vegas, then that's the safe one to make.
All right. Kelly Carter there in Los Angeles. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And one last thing, how much can you really trust the person messaging you through a dating site? We've talked about the real concerns from women and men in the dating world and the criticism that dating sites have not done enough to protect their users. Well, yesterday, Tinder announced it will soon have a feature that will potentially allow you to run a criminal background check on your potential date. This is the first time anything like this has ever been embedded in a dating app. Tinder has enlisted the help of Garbo, a group that can automatically pull arrest records on someone. All they need is a full name or a phone number. But that's the tricky thing. Some people do not give you their phone number before meeting you, specifically because it feels kind of sketchy.
I've definitely had a lot of people go to your profile.
Wait, you've had other people go my profile your behalf?
Like, this is what I'm doing. This is the girl I'm gonna see. Like, what do you think? And like, did you not do that?
Dating sites have traditionally stayed away from last names, from personal details. Even if you have this info, it won't necessarily be free to run this check. And then there's the issue of what people actually want to know about. Garbo says it'll be checking not just convictions, but any arrest records in case charges got watered down by a plea bargain. They'll also check other legal documents like restraining orders. On the flip side, they will not show you if your date has ever had a drug charge or traffic violation. They say this is about preventing violence, not arguments over value judgments.
Dating has changed. And that's okay. It's okay to start looking with no idea where it might go.
But you can't overestimate what a big deal this is in the dating world. Tinder is owned by Match, which also owns Match.com, OkCupid, Hinge. Like, if background checks become the norm here, they're going to be everywhere. In the meantime, if your date is asking you to spell your last name, it might not just be to Google you. I like how all the dating app commercials lately are just people being like, you know, I really just like food. Yeah, everyone likes food. You're just not saying the other basic thing everyone likes, travel, because we're in a pandemic. Just get original, people. All right. More on all these stories at abcnews.com or the ABC News app. I'm Brad Milkey. I'm out tomorrow, but our buddy Mary Alice Parks will have you covered. She's got the mic. I'll see you later.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table.
What is happening here?
It's just beautiful chaos.
Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view.
To be honest, I was thinking about asking him for a foot massage, and then I just froze.
This is the best gig on TV.
And you know, anything can happen.
That is what we do here.
I'm not going to lie, the chair's a little small for my behind.
The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.